It's hard to say who actually was the first settler of Aberdeen, but we've always kind of decided it was Alec McConnell and his uncle McCullough that lived on Bradner Road, the place bordering Bradner and McClure Road, which is McClure today. But there was other old-timers of the area that were here very shortly afterwards, or were the Lehman family, the Sinclair family, the Gledhill family. And the Ross family, and a lot of the roads at that time were, and trails were named after the settlers that were on that particular road. Like the Lehman family, when we were kids, we always called the road that they lived on the Lehman Road. It was known as the Lehman Road. Sinclair's, the road that they lived on, which is now McClure, was called Sinclair Road. The Ross Road was named after the Ross family, and of course that name still remains today. For an example, the way the roads were named, here's the way they went. Taking the Downs Road from Lefevre Road through to past Mount Lehman. Well, from Lefevre to Bradner, that was called the Lehman Road. From Bradner to Ross, that was called the McDonald Road. And from Ross to Mount Lehman was called the Towland Road. And from Mount Lehman east was called the White Road. And today it's all called the Downs Road, which makes it much simpler. That's the way the road used to be called. The road used to be named. Around 1900, or a little after, there was quite a few settlers came in. There was the Cato family, the Przlosky families, there was quite a few Japanese families in the district. There was quite a few Belgian families, or Belgians came into the area at that time. There was Fred de Bruin, Paul Teetart and Pack Teetart, Van de Putz. Into Bergen. They were all bachelors except the one family, the Vanderput family, and they remained bachelors. They all passed on here as bachelors. One old-time family I missed mentioning was the Manning family. They lived south on Bradner, south about a half mile down. Verl Manning went on to, he was the son, and he went on to be the superintendent of schools in Vancouver, and his sister Zella went on to teach Normal for many years at UBC. Another old-timer that should be mentioned, his name was Hegstrom, and he was a shoe cobbler for the district. He did a fine job, did it all by hand. We, as kids, we used to take our shoes down there as soon as school was over and get them all repaired for the September, and then we'd go barefoot through the summer. He lived west of Lefevre Road on Fraser Highway there on the south side where the duck farm is today. Another family that's been here quite a few years is the Denny family, and the three sons still live on the home place right today. Russell, Bud, and Charlie. there's a lot of different little stories that goes with the old timers of the district here, like one in Fred de Bruyn. He was a Belgian here, and he made a lot of home brew, both beer and whiskey. We never did ever see his still, but he claimed he had one, and not even the police would ever find it, which was quite possible, because he had 60 acres of land to hide it on down there. But during Prohibition, he used to have a lot of company, cars going up and down his driveway, and it was thought that he used to sell booze to the Americans, although he never ever was charged with that, although he had many a visit by the local constabulary, but which was the provincial police in those days, but they never charged him with anything, and he just went on about his business doing his thing. And when Prohibition was over, the traffic stopped coming. But that's the way things were in those days. They had to have a dollar, and if there's one way of getting it, they'd do it that way. Another old-timer that was around was Frank Tilley, and he got he started all the, or he made sure that all the young fellas had their little bottle with them when they went to the dances, and he provided them with the home brew. Some of it was pretty hard to drink, but nevertheless, they drank it. Tom Brown, he was the first fur farmer in the area, and that goes back many, many years. He farmed foxes and what was the other one? Foxes and badgers. And Russell Denny claims that the badgers got out one day and caught their dog and ate it. But that might be in Russell's story, if he gets the story together, that he might mention that. Huey Williams was an old-timer, an old bachelor that lived up on McClure Road, on the west end of McClure Road. He met an untimely end. He was walking on the Fraser Highway one evening with his dog, and they figure he got hit with a car. It was a hit and run, because they never did find out who hit him, but he was found dead there the next day, laying in the ditch with the dog standing beside him. But he was quite an old timer. There was quite a few stories about Huey in those days. He was a great neighbor, minded his own business, but Dunk Calder lived down Bradner Road South, about three quarters of a mile down on the east side of Bradner. And he had quite an orchard down there, and he was clearing land to build more orchard. He had the idea that if he planted 1,000 apple trees and he got a dollar a tree, that'd give him $1,000 a year income, and that's all he'd need to live on. And while he was clearing his land, he had one of these old hand stump pullers, and the handle slipped and hit him on the head and killed him. And so that was the end of Dunk Calder's orchard. Huey Williams was an old pioneer. He lived up McClure Road, a bachelor. He was a Welshman. He came to a rather sad ending. He was walking down the old Yale Road, and somebody hit him, and they found him the next day laying dead in the ditch. On here? What do I do now? There never was anybody charged with a hit and run. They never found anybody. But afterwards, his property come up for tax sale. He'd never ever paid the taxes on his sale, and it come up for bid. And the highest bid was $200, and the lowest bid was $50. There were 17 acres involved. And the fellow that bid the $200 backed out, and the fellow that bid the $50 backed out in the finish, and neither one of them took the place. So a year later, my brother and I, we put up $200 bid on the place, but the place sold for $400 the following year. That was for 17 acres. There's quite a few bachelors here in the early days. Why they came out here into the valley instead of staying in town, I don't know, but they settled out here in the valley, and most of them farmed. But there was two across the road from our place at the corner of McClure and Bradner, and their name was Teetarts, Paul and Pack Teetart. My brother and I used to spend quite a bit of time visiting these bachelors, and they always welcomed us and talked to us and never ever discouraged us from coming to visit them. But anyway, this one day they were getting ready to kill a pig, and they had about a 350-pound pig there, and they took five of them to hold the pig. They stood it up on a table and they just stuck it. They didn't shoot it or anything. They just stuck the knife into it and got the blood from it. Let the blood run into a pan until the pig died of just plain running out of blood. Anyway, while they were drawing this blood off, one fellow was stirring it all the time, and when he got it, when they got all that the pig had, well, they took it in and they put it on the stove and prepared it for blood puddings. But that was the way they did it. And a few days later, my brother and I were back, and we were eating blood pudding up at the Teetarts. There's many, many things like this carried on by these fellows. It sounds cruel today, but that was the way they did it in those days. And they all had their little specialties, what they did. When I think back, I think it was pretty great that we were able to get in on it and see how some of these things were done, because we didn't have the tools to work with that they've got to work with today, and trucks to haul them off to slaughterhouses and things like this. It was all done right here, right in front of you. There was quite a few mills scattered through the area here in the early days. Some fairly good-sized mills and some smaller ones. There was a camp just down the Bradner Road, about a mile off Fraser Way North, that was run by the Japanese. And of course, they had that whole camp there. They stayed right there on the mill site. And they called it the Jap Camp. And they called it that themselves, the Jap Camp. But they pulled out, I would say, in the early 30s when they pulled out. But there's always others ready to move in and take their place. And one of them was Martin Peterson. He milled here for a good many years, right up to the time he died. And then his wife carried on the same site, right on their place, until she was bought out by the Vancouver sawmills. And these people, made a lot of work for a lot of people through the air, for a lot of young men through the area here over the years. The wages weren't high, but you could always pick up a few dollars, and most of them were very good on the pay. They paid, and although it was small money, but you got your pay. Grocery shopping was, and supplies, they called it supplies in those days, was always a bit of a problem. They had always had long distances to go for supplies, and one of the places that the pioneers used to go to from the Aberdeen area here, and probably from other areas around, was Clearbrook, USA, Clearbrook, Washington. They could get to there by foot. And another place, of course, was Westminster, by going down by riverboat. But that took the whole day, they chose to go to Clearbrook rather than go to Westminster. They could walk there and be back in a half a day. And always my dad and his brother were quite young, and they usually had the job of getting the groceries. And the store owner always gave them as a little bonus a corn cob pipe and a package of tobacco. That was for free. That was for coming and buying groceries at his place. Whether they smoked or not, they got a corn cob pipe and a packet of tobacco. And of course, they always tried their hand at smoking. Even when we were kids in the 20s and early 30s, there wasn't any dentists here close by. We had to go to Sumas, Washington for our dentist work. And all the kids around here had to go over there until the sometime in the 30s when the dentist came into Abbotsford. Vic Lehman and Joe Lehman were probably two of the first settlers here. They were here when Willie Gledhill arrived, and he arrived in 1886. And they were here then. But Vic was a builder. His brother Joe was a trapper. But Vic, one of the things that he built a lot of was pole barns. He would write out of the timber and he would construct them. And my dad was interested in that. Arthur Gledhill was interested in these pole barns. So he went to work for Vic. Hewing and building these pole barns, and he built two with Vic Lehman, and then he went on his own, and he hewed eight barns out of the bush and built eight barns here in the Aberdeen area himself. So he left his mark here with barns. The Gledhills, like I mentioned before, Willie came and in 1886. He was the older brother. He was the oldest of the family. And he came out with John Morton to Vancouver, and he worked on the Morton farm at Mission for 1 year. And then he took the quarter section up on Bradner Road, Bradner and Downs Road. What is Bradner and Downs Road today? He took up a quarter section there, and once he got the quarter section, he sent for his two brothers, Alfred and Arthur. And so the mother brought Alfred and Arthur out. Alfred was 10 and Arthur was 8 when they arrived on Bradner Road. That they started school as soon as they arrived out here that fall. They started at the Aberdeen School. The Aberdeen School was located at where the Aberdeen Cemetery is today. That's where they went to school. They went to school there, and the Ross brothers went to school, some of the Rosses, and there were a few others. I believe Wilford Macy's went to school there. Later on, the school was moved up onto the corner of the Macy property. There was acreage purchased off the corner of the Macy property where the school is today. And it still remains there going today. The Gledhill family has the fourth generation going there right now. Dad and Uncle Alfred started there in 1890. At the Aberdeen School, and we still have kids going there today. After they had got all the education they needed, the sister Alice decided that she was pulling out and that she was leaving the three boys. By this time, the Alfred and Arthur had already purchased their property from a fellow by the name of McDonald, who wanted to get away to a gold rush. And the purchase price was $800, and it was purchased at $1,900. I have the deed for that here at the house. So after Alice pulled out, the boys went right up to their property and they built themselves a shack and they moved up to their own property and became independent. Alfred marrying shortly after that, marrying Elizabeth Ross, and Arthur marrying Georgia Carmichael. Both old-timers themselves. But they, Lizzie Ross died sometime in the 30s, but Georgia finished her life out on the property, and the property is still in the family today. My son Fred is living in the old home place, and I have a place next door. We got a lot of religion in those good old days. My dad being a United Church member, and my mother being a Presbyterian Church member, well, of course, we had to visit both churches every Sunday. Well, at least it seemed that way to us kids that we were going every Sunday. Morning at Bradner, and then afternoon at Aberdeen. The reason we were up at Aberdeen is because some evangelist would come through the area and come and see Dad, and Dad would ask Dad if he would come to a church service if it was held in the school, and Dad always said yes. He never ever said no. And of course, away we'd go to support this fellow. And we really didn't mind these evangelists because they brought some good, bouncy hymns into it, and we didn't mind that at all. But then in the evening, of course, we would go to the United Church at Aldergrove. And for years, there used to be a bus would come around and pick us up. And this was in the 30s, and take us down to the church. And the driver of the bus was Harry Fowles. But anyway, I guess the religion didn't hurt us. We got lots of it, and we're still going to church now and again, even today. In the 30s, everybody was hard up. Everybody was in the same boat. And you made your entertainment. And one of the things we used to do on the farm was Dad would clear a piece of land. And while he was clearing the land, he would pile up the stumps into one nice big pile. And after he got the finished clearing, then we would have a party. And we'd try and pick an evening, a nice, beautiful, warm evening where it was going to be nice. And about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he would go and light this pile of stumps. And then the people would come. We'd let everybody know, neighbors and relatives from Vancouver. And it was quite an event. The people from town, they would sleep in the barn or the house, wherever they wanted to. Most of them, the young people, chose to sleep in the barn. But it was quite an event, and we do this every year. And it was quite a preparation. They would load the piano onto the wagon, and they'd pull the piano out to the pasture. And then somebody would get up on the wagon and play the piano, and we'd have quite a sing-song. Sister Gail used to do a lot of the piano playing. But we had these events pretty well right up till the time of the Second World War. And then after that, everybody seemed to get too busy and of course, doing their own thing, and we dropped these picnics and parties. Dad and Mother's home was a great place for a lot of the teachers at Aberdeen to stay at over the years. I guess one of the first teachers that boarded at our place was Miss Lucy Owen when she taught at Aberdeen. Now that goes back a good many years. That goes back to before I was born. I can't remember all the teachers that stayed. But we had Gordon Trotman. He stayed. another teacher that stayed was Dick Cleland. But these fellows all went off to the war. And after the war started, it seemed like we didn't take any more teachers in as boarders. Around 1933, Dad decided that he'd run for alderman. His brother before him had been alderman for about 10 or 12 years. His brother Alfred. So Dad thought he'd try his hand at running for alderman. He figured he had something to offer, so he ran and he got in. And it was really tough times. He couldn't have hit it at a worse time. And there just wasn't any money, but the municipality used to allot so much a year for relief to help the people that were down and out, and but they had to work for it. Everybody had to work for it. Nobody got it for nothing unless they were a widow woman with a family. That was a little different, but men had to work for their money. And there's this one fellow. It was on a cold, frosty morning, and quite cold in the wintertime, and he'd put on, he was a bachelor, he lived up in the Blue Jay Road. And of course the municipality was, in those days, was divided into four wards, and each alderman looked after his ward and the people in it. And this fellow from the Blue Jay Heights, was in Ward 1. That was the ward Dad was looking after. So he came down this morning real early, and we'd just finished at the barn. We'd just come in for breakfast. And he had a long top coat on, and of course, as soon as Dad seen him, he knew what he was after. He was after some relief money, and they had cut off all single men. They were keeping what little money they had left for married men and families, and the single men were cut off, and he was a single man. And so anyway, Mother asked him to come in for breakfast. His name was Mr. Crosley, and so he came in for breakfast, and of course, like your nose will do when it's in cold weather, when you're out in the cold and you come into a warm room, your nose starts to run, and his was no different than anybody else's. It started to run, so he reached into his top coat pocket to pull out a hanky, and he pulled out a great big ball of fluff, and he blew his nose into this, and mice jumped out of it and went in every direction, right in the house. Well, us kids at the time thought this was the greatest thing we'd ever seen. With mice running around all over the house, especially after he blew his nose. One thing that came to mind before the Depression about road building, Willie got a contract from the job. It wasn't a contract, he just took the job on. And to build the first, or to dig out the stumps and cut the brush on the first mile of road from the old Yale Road to Downs Road. And they did that for $200. It was good enough by that time to take a team and wagon when they got through with it. The big stumps, if there was anything big, they had to run the road around the stump. But the thing was to make it passable for a wagon and a team. And they did that first mile for $200. A being Willie, Arthur, and Alfred Gledhill. There was always something happening in the early days to entertain us kids. Of course, it didn't take much, and some of it might seem unreal today. But we were all had gone to bed and were sleeping well into the wee hours of the morning when there was an awful lot of excitement out in the road in front of the house. So we all jumped out of bed to see what all this ruckus was on the road. And of course it was dark and there wasn't an awful lot to see, but the noise had passed, and of course we went back to bed. But in the morning, we got up, and here was a herd of cows that had been put in on the old Teetark place. And that's what the noise was all about. The cows was herded up the road in the middle of the night and put into this place. And so in the morning, we found out that there was an East Indian fellow. He had rented the place from Teetarks, and he had put this herd of cows in. And how he'd come by this herd of cows was there was an East Indian in Abbotsford that had been killed by an automobile. And this fellow across the road that had the cattle, he had worked for this Singh for a number of years, and he claimed that he never got paid. So when the fellow got killed, he immediately took the cows and he brought them up and he put them on this property as his pay for all these years of work. But there was the nephew of the fellow that was killed. His name was Gunda Singh, and there was a nephew of Gunda decided that he was the rightful heir to the cows. So that following night, after the cows arrived across the road, we were all sleeping again, and there was a terrific disturbance out in front of the house, and there was a big battle going on. And of course us kids went right down and got into the center of this battle. And it was these East Indians were battling each other for the right to these cows. And the nephew won. He won that fight. And he took all the cows. And he took them down to Bradner, to a place north of Bradner. So anyway, that morning, around about 10 o'clock, the East Indian from across the road, his name was Bagga Singh. Bagga came over and asked Dad if he would go up to Stave Lake and pick up an army for him. So Dad ran up to Stave Lake with the car and picked up this bunch of men. There's five in the group, and brought them down. And that night, they set out about midnight, and they went down to Bradner and they stole these cattle back. And there was another big disturbance out in front of our place. They got caught up to about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then out in front of our place. So we seen another battle, and that night Bagga had his thumb just about bit off. But anyway, us kids got the job of, my brother and I, we got the job of milking his cows until his hand got better. But the police moved into the picture then and stopped the fighting and said that Bagga would keep the cows until the case came to court, and whoever got the cows in court would have them then. But until then, Bagga would keep the cows and look after them. As it turned out, Bagga won his case in court, and he kept the cows over here for quite a few years, right up and into the war years. And then he finally got too old. He was an old man then, and he sold out and disappeared. We've never seen him since. Probably went back to India. I don't know if this would be wanted in a book or not, but I think there is one of the East Indians that lived about a quarter of a mile. Well, he lived in Tilly's old place, Frank Tilly's old place. His name was Nanda Singh. And he died, and he was cremated at Bradner. And I think that he was the last East Indian to be cremated in an open fire, a public cremation in an open fire. It was quite an event. This Gunda was cremated in an open fire at Abbotsford, and Nanda was done. But it drew such big crowds that they stopped it. Most of the farmers here in the Aberdeen area shipped milk to Fraser Valley Milk Producers Association. They first started shipping by BC Electric into Vancouver, and later the milk was picked up by trucks and hauled to the plant. It was, the milk was nearly all put into tin milk in those days, tin milk or butter. And the brand was Pacific Milk. Very little, I don't think there was any milk from the this far up the Fraser Valley that got in on the fluid milk market in Vancouver. That was all looked after by Ladner and Lulu Island and closer areas in. Our milk was all manufactured in those days. Not like it is today. It's all today it's hauled in and it all is heads for the fluid milk market. And what isn't used on that is used for manufacture. But in those days, it was just the milk from this area was all manufactured. There was the Japanese, they were all berry growers, pretty well. There wasn't any shrub growers to speak of in those days. This is something recent in the last 20, 30 years. But the Japanese looked after the fruit growing, and they were good at it, very good at it. There was some poultry farms around. Swenson being one of the larger ones in our area. And later on, Swenson had a hatchery, Swenson and Eve Hatchery. But it was usually dairy, berries, and poultry was the main incomes for farming in this area. I think I mentioned before that Dad became quite a barn builder, a pole barn builder. He was a great hewer. He was really something to watch, hewing a log out, getting it ready for a building. He could make chips fly 30 feet when he was working the axe and the broad axe. But he built 8 barns. I can't tell you all of the barns that he built, but he built Franklin's barn. That's where Denny's lived today. And he built his brother's barn, Alfred's, hewed the material out and put it together. Macy's barn and Cato's barn. And there was 4 more that he built, and I'm not just sure just where they were, but 2 of the barns that he built are still standing today. The one at Alfred's place, it's now Turchin's, Mike Turchin. Is still standing, and Denny's is still standing. That's the one that was built for Franklin. I was born on the farm. My 2 sisters who were older, Abigail and Rhoda. Abigail was the oldest, and then Rhoda. And then I was brought into the world in 1925. And my brother Bob was born in 1927. We were all raised on the farm. The girls, of course, left, and my brother left, but I stayed with my dad on the farm. And I farmed with him for many years, and I had the odd job away from the farm, but I always returned and to give him a hand at haying and putting the crops in and so on. So I never had any real steady job until I got married. And but before I get into getting married, in 1933, the old Pioneer home burnt down. It was a big house. But we thought, us kids figured it was the end of the world when the house burned down. We didn't know what was going to happen then. But Dad, the smoke hadn't settled, and Dad was already fixing up an old pig pen. And he relined it and papered it and put some bunks in it, and got the horses, and they pulled it up to a site, and we used that for living quarters until he got a new house built. That was something else in itself. One night, Mother was cooking sausages there in the old cabin, and lightning struck the cabin, and she just happened to be frying sausages, and of course the frying pan was full of electricity, and of course she threw the pan, and there were sausages all over the cabin. I'll always remember that as a kid, and remember the shock of the cabin being struck. After I grew up, of course, like all young fellows, they start looking for a gal, and I married a girl named Isabella. We had 7 children, a boy and 6 girls. They were all educated in Aberdeen, but I ran out of money farming, and I got an opportunity to go to work for Buckerfields for 2 weeks. So I grabbed the opportunity just to get the extra cash, and that 2 weeks turned into 10 years. But I quit after 10 years. I managed their store at Aldergrove and Abbotsford, but after 10 years, I decided that I had started out to be a farmer and I was going back to it. So I went back to the farm, and I did quite well, milked 45 cows, and retired from the dairy business. Like I tell people, I moved 4 times in my life and never left the farm. I'm still on the farm today, and probably will remain here.